There's lots going on in the NBA world right now, and joining me on the Podium Game podcast is Robin Lundberg from ESPN Radio. I'm Brian Gibberman. Robin, for everyone out there, why don't you get out where they can hear you on ESPN Radio 98.7 and then anything you do nationally?
Yeah, every Saturday night is the national show on ESPN Radio on 98.7 ESPN in New York. It's 4 to 6 a.m. weekdays, Monday through Friday, and all of it's available via podcast as well. So if you're not on Vampire Hours or anything, iTunes, ESPN Radio app, I tweet out the link from my Twitter account at Robin Lundberg. All those standard methods you can get the podcast.
All right, so that, and Robin does a good job on his radio show. It's always an enjoyable listen. When I'm working my Vampire Hours, I like to try and tune in while I'm sitting at my desk at work. Lots going on in the. How you doing, Robin? I probably should have done that first.
Oh, I'm good. You know, I went to the salad place, got two salads for dinner or lunch, sort of breakfast. I just woke up and dinner. I'm going to go to boxing class when I'm done here. So everything's good.
That sounds really active and healthy.
Yeah, I'm trying. I do my best.
I can't remember the last time I ate a salad. Jeez. All right, that's not good. All right, Kobe Bryant. Did you read Woj's story about him?
I read. I saw some of it. I didn't read the whole thing, but I did see some of the clippings from it.
All right, for anyone who's living in a closet or just not paying attention, Kobe Bryant decided to officially retire. There's a whole bunch of people get mad that he gets criticized, and there's two separate things. I'm going to read a quote from you from Kobe, and I just think he's completely missing the point of what people are saying, and I'm going to guess you have the same sort of reaction as I did, but I'll just let you hear the quote and get your thoughts on it. I get held to much higher standards than most of my peers. If I have a bad shooting night, it's he's in the grave, he's in the coffin. Look around the league, and other players have bad shooting nights, and it's just a bad shooting night. But the expectations they have for me, they're actually something that I appreciate. Achilles injury, fractured knee, torn shoulder, 20th year in the league, 37 years old. All of that, and the expectations are that I average 30 points. But I appreciate those standards because it's something that still pushes me, still drives me. Let's see what I can do. Like, he's completely missing the reasons for his criticism.
Yeah, I mean, Kobe's a very bright dude, but he's a bit deluded right now. He seems a bit delusional. Nothing he can do is going to erase his career. His career is truly great, and I don't want to be going out of my way to criticize an all-time great player. I don't want to be doing that. If it was simply a function of him declining physically and not having the game, that happens to everybody, right? I mean, everybody declines physically, and I just sort of ignore it. But it's the way he's gone about his business as if he still is the guy who's scoring 30 points a game. And it's not just this year. It's been the last couple of years. Like, I get angry watching the Lakers play because what Kobe is doing is not basketball, you know? It's something else. And it's hard to watch at times. And he has totally hijacked that franchise, both from an attitude standpoint. Remember last year when he was chasing the Jordan scoring record and he called all of his teammates soft as Charmin or whatever? He wasn't even practicing at that point. And I give Kobe tons of credit for fighting back from the injuries he suffered. But he is going out there and playing as if he's Kobe Bryant from 2006 instead of having a late career transformation, adaptation, a la, let's say, Paul Pierce. I mean, that's the easiest example to use, and that's been the problem. It's not that it's happening, it's how it's happening, and he hasn't changed. And I guess that's the gift and the curse about it, because part of what made Kobe great is that indomitable will, and that's been part of what's made him such a bad basketball player the last several years, where he still has the, that's the part, you see it, he still has the glimpses where he probably could make himself effective in a different type of role, and instead the way he's going out there and trying to be Kobe Bean Bryant, he's one of the worst, if not the worst rotation player in the NBA.
Last year, it didn't bother me as much as it does this year. Randall was hurt. We didn't really know what they had in Clarkson. There was no long-term pieces in place that they needed to work on and develop until we kind of saw what Clarkson was and he had some potential. But this year, I mean, you have Russell, who's actually started to play he's playing reasonably well for a rookie guard in the NBA and what you would expect. Clarkson's clearly a good player. I don't know if I love Randall, but he's definitely worthwhile to see what you have, and he should be taking on a larger role in the offense. So he's taking away from pieces that could eventually make the Lakers good, when last year he wasn't really doing that.
Sure, but he was still just taking away from the Lakers as a whole. Just like, you know, if I wasn't paying attention, I wouldn't care, but I saw a bunch of those games, and you just watch it, and it would be appalling what he would be doing, because he'd commandeer everything that was going about. And I think they actually had a little bit better of a team last year. They had more NBA players on it, and it was not just that he was emasculating them in the process. Look, Carlos Boozer's way past his prime, but he's a pro, and he got thrown under the bus. Jeremy Lin and Ed Davis were their two best players, I think, last year. And I don't know if they did this on purpose, because they had a pick-and-roll thing going. You can see it in the preseason. They don't think they touched the floor together during the regular season. And it's like Byron Scott's an enabler of what Kobe's been doing. He also didn't play any defense. You know, he's playing a one-man zone defense. And to see everybody else benched or held accountable and Kobe allowed to do whatever he wants, yeah, I guess in a sense he's earned that. But it still doesn't send the right message across. Now that he's made the retirement announcement, I mean, it's going to help him, because people are going to get wistful and sentimental and start viewing everything through the prism of, this is the last time we're going to see Kobe. And I would like, you know, as an NBA fan, as a basketball fan, I would like to see him have a nice twilight to his career, have him see a nice send-off moment. Because whatever you think about Kobe, he's one of the top 10-ish players of all time, and a legitimate all-time great. I just wish, instead of him hard-headedly looking at this as if he's being criticized for getting older, instead of realizing he's being criticized for the way he's gone out. And I don't want to see that. There's part of me that doesn't want to see that rewarded, you know, because when I'm in the moment, I'm just watching him. I'm like, what is this guy doing? Like, you know, it's a disgrace to the game, almost, to be like an old stodgy sports writer. It's a disgrace to the game. But, you know, the overall picture, if I take a step back, I mean, it's not that big a deal. And for all those young Lakers, you would hope this is, you know this is the last season they're going to have to deal with it. And I would figure they're going to have some sort of overhaul in the structure of that organization after this year. And whether they're doing it on purpose or not, they may be doing a good job making sure they finish with a bottom three record, because the only way they keep their pick is if it's top three, otherwise Philly gets it.
And that was even more important last year because of what that draft class was, that they kept their pick. So indirectly playing Kobe and letting him do whatever he was doing didn't work out terribly for him, because they were right on the borderline. I think they were like a 17% chance of giving their pick away. If Kobe played less minutes and played more last year, they'd probably lose that pick.
Yeah, I mean, and that was the, I guess, the best case scenario for them, is to get high in the draft. And you're right. I mean, they weren't going anywhere last year. It's just when you are watching it, you don't want to see some guys who are good pros just totally be made into scapegoats, or just a team that could be a little, you know, you could just see their whole morale being destroyed. And, you know, last year's team, I haven't watched this year's team quite as much. I probably should, because of some of these developing guys, but I learned my lesson from last year. I just had never seen a more selfish team, period, than that Lakers team last year, and I think that was the example set by Kobe. And you see some of the frustration boiling over. Is it going to ruin D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle? I don't know if I'd go that far, but they need a new coach, and they need a new outlook on their careers after this year, for sure.
How KG, what the Timberwolves are doing, and incorporating KG into that, is basically the perfect way you want to do this with the older vet and the young guys. Wiggins, Towns, Levine, I think I'm saying that right, are all...
Look at everyone's saying this is the end of an era, or all of his peers are gone. That's not necessarily true. What Kobe's done for a guard is basically unprecedented. But I referenced Pierce before. You just referenced KG. Duncan is still really, really good. But all of those guys, to a degree, have changed their approach to the game and what they are bringing to the table facing reality. You know, they're not as delusional as Kobe. And Kobe, as you read that quote, he keeps saying everybody wants him to be Kobe. No, in his mind, he is playing as if he is still Kobe, and that's where the criticism is coming from.
Yeah, we want him to be a facilitator, and allowing the criticism is we want him to allow
the
OG,
the OG of the team. Hey, you know, here I got you under my arm. This is what you should do, and he'll still give him the flashback Kobe moments. But he shouldn't be taking more shots than everybody else on the team. He shouldn't be, you know, you can see it on the court. It's not just when he says the stuff vocally or calls them out in practice. He is demonstrative on the court as far as his personality taking over and demanding the ball. And that's what people are just a little taken aback by.
All right, from an old legend to two that are still, one clearly in his prime, one probably on the way out, LeBron James and Steph Curry. So I saw Steph Curry live for the first time in a regular season game last week against the Suns, and I've never been in an arena like that. It was, I never saw Jordan play live. I've seen pretty much every other superstar since Jordan play in person since then, and that was an incredible experience for a basketball nerd. Have you seen Curry play live yet?
Yes. You know, I've seen, I might have seen Jordan play. Yo, you know what? I did see Jordan play live when I was a kid at the Spectrum in Philadelphia. I've seen LeBron. I actually saw LeBron and Kobe. I mean, I've seen LeBron and Kobe plenty of times, but I saw LeBron and Kobe back-to-back nights at the Garden when Kobe scored 60.
You went that week when everything was awful.
Double or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen Curry this year, and Curry this year is a little bit different than even Curry last year. I mean, as good as he was last year, he seems to have almost reached his final form this year. I like to refer to him as sort of a gamma irradiated Steve Nash, right? If Steve Nash became the Hulk, that's kind of what Steph Curry is.
Would you, if you had to pick one, you could only, I'm going radio talk show-ish here.
Yeah.
If you had to pick one between LeBron live in his prime or Curry now, which one would you pick?
This is a tough one because what Curry is doing is electric and awesome and representative of where the game is. You know, I think some people don't realize when they talk about Golden State and how good Golden State is, some people I don't think understand why Golden State is as good as they are, and they keep pining for yesteryear or, you know, back to the basket big men or, you know, all that stuff. And they don't realize why that lineup of death works and what makes Curry special and what makes the Warriors special. And I don't want to take anything away from what Curry is doing right now. The way I would put it, though, I'll use a pro wrestling analogy. You know, it's still early in this season, but the Warriors haven't played 20 games yet. And LeBron, however you want to slice it, is a top five player of all time. I would probably say LeBron's the best player I've ever seen. So
that's a you and I get. We don't want to go there because then we're just going to have a bunch of people yelling at us.
Yeah. in order to take the crown from LeBron, since we'll refer to him as the king, you don't do it by count out or disqualification. You have to do it by pin or submission. So what I mean by that is Curry has to do this for a little bit longer to officially take it from LeBron before I will say Curry. But, I mean, what do you – this is Sophie's choice, right?
I love the shooting and the handle aspect as much as LeBron was probably – like, I fell in love with that Kings team, and then LeBron was the first non-like Knicks-based thing that I really latched on to as a fan. And Curry, I just feel like – I just like his style a little bit more visually than I do LeBron's, as great as it was.
Well, the thing about LeBron is, you know, and some people may not like, you know, because it's not as aesthetically pleasing to see the power and all that stuff, but what I've always appreciated about LeBron, what I immediately appreciate, I mean, the reason I became a fan of LeBron is I was at College Park, Maryland. I went to a bar called Santa Fe. I don't think it exists anymore. And they were showing one of those high school games. And I guess the cynical part of my brain was activated. Everyone was saying, this LeBron guy's the next superstar. And I wanted to pick apart his game and figure out why they were wrong. And I watched a few minutes of that game. I was like, nope, this guy's the next one. For LeBron, it's that combination of he is physically gifted. It's like his body is made of electrolytes. You know, he won the genetic lottery. But on top of that, he sees the game at a higher level. So when I watch LeBron, I'm not just appreciative of the physical gifts, but also just the basketball genius that he has. I mean, you know, the way Curry dissects a defense by stretching them out to the three-point line and then breaking them down and finding his Golden State teammates is a joy to watch. And then the way LeBron will just physically overpower somebody in transition or get into the paint himself and find his teammates for three-point shots like he has heat-seeking laser vision is a joy to watch as well. I mean, I understand why Curry is so aesthetically pleasing to people because they see him do it at a different size. And really, there's never been anything like him. But at the same time, we're also used to LeBron. You know, we've seen LeBron for how many years now? And absence will maybe be one of the things that make the heart grow fonder there.
That's I remember watching him in those high school games, and I was the same way. And then the first game that was on ESPN, I was sitting in my dorm room in college and watched them play the Kings. I was just like, holy cow, this guy is just something I've never seen. And Curry, in a weird, different way, as you said, is also something we've never seen before. He dominates a game at his size, and the way he does it, it's just, it doesn't logically make sense.
Yeah, I mean, people keep saying bad shots or bad shots. I mean, how many licks does it take to get to the bottom of a Tootsie Pop? How many shots would it take from three for it to become a bad shot for Curry? If you even go back to the finals last year, I thought David Blatt did an excellent job coaching in the finals, and his strategy his strategy of trapping basically out to midcourt was to get the ball out of Curry's hands. And people didn't realize, because Curry didn't have an awesome all-time finals, how pivotal he was to what Golden State was doing, because he simply just made the right play out of that trap, and it ping-ponged the ball to create mismatches across the floor. And that's really when I think Golden State unlocked their super mode that we've seen now. And you have to adjust. I mean, you can't play Curry that way anymore. It'll be interesting to see how the Cavs even play him if they meet in the finals, which they probably should. I mean, I think the best way to do it, and it's easier said than done, and it's a pick your poison because he can score this way. But I would try and make him a scorer off the dribble, not a facilitator off the dribble, and obviously not a shooter. But like I said, he has such control of the ball. If I were Cleveland, I'd actually be working on some funky small ballish lineups as the season goes along. LeBron at center type things, or more LeBron at power forward, just in preparation as a lab experiment a little bit to see what works for that particular series, because it's the only team that the Cavs would have to use that against.
So the Warriors have a plus 16-point differential right now. The next two highest teams in the league are the Spurs and Thunder. They combined are 16.2. You think this is good for the league?
Yeah, I mean, I think dynasties are always good for the league. I think something special like what's happening with Golden State is always good. Look at the attention it's getting. If people are talking about the Warriors, when after an NFL Sunday or whatever might happen, the Warriors are winning, they're making the news, they're getting the talking point. And the league itself is filled with parity outside the very top team. So on any given night, you might watch a really competitive game between two solid, two good teams. And then you know who the big boys are. You know where the marquee event is. I mean, if it were to go on for 10 years, maybe not. But I think right now it's great for them.
I went through and looked through all the NBA Finals TV ratings, and there's no way you can argue. I don't think you could really argue against this being good for the league growing to a larger audience, because all the biggest series in terms of viewership were in recent years since like 90 were all the ones with the Bulls. And this is, whether you think they're better or they're worse or whatever, this is probably the closest thing we've had to them on a consistent level. Yeah, you have the one Celtic team you could point to, and maybe there's another team. Those Lakers teams are...
The Heat 27-game win streak got everybody.
Yeah, but even those, like, which year was the Heat 27-game win streak?
That was the third year they were together, right?
So that was the year they beat the Spurs?
Yes.
So the average ratings in those finals was a 10.4. The Bulls, Jordan's... The lowest rated Jordan finals was a 14.2.
Well, it's hard to compare to, because at that point there wasn't the number of cable options and the way people consume was a little different. So it's hard to be relative Jordan era versus now. But yeah, I get your point. And you look at, you know, dynasties have always historically been good. And then there's also the idea that as good as Golden State is, and they're historically great, they may wind up the greatest team of all time, I don't think people believe that they're infallible. I don't think people believe that it's a sure thing they're going to win the title because San Antonio and Cleveland exist.
I'm kind of there. I think they're kind of a sure thing.
Injuries, all that stuff. Yeah. I mean, I know people keep bringing that up. You never know. I mean, when there's teams as good as Cleveland, I agree. I mean, I picked them. I bet on them. But would I be shocked if they lost? I don't think I'd be shocked if they lost.
I'm with you. I think the Thunder have kind of screwed up what they have there with their supplementary moves around Ibaka, Westbrook, and
think about the Thunder as you mentioned that. Like, that shows you a power in a different era, because everybody used to think, oh, you just have two stars. If you have three stars, it's a guaranteed title. The Thunder have Durant, Westbrook, and Ibaka, and it's probably not going to be nearly enough. You know, you need a full roster. Versatile two-way players to win, and that's the secret to Golden State. I mean, where does Klay Thompson rank on the most important players in the Warriors? Where would you rank him?
Third.
I would probably put him fourth. I think Iguodala and Draymond Green are more important.
I would put Green ahead of him. I wouldn't put Iggy ahead of him.
I don't think they can do what they do when they go to that lineup that changed everything in the finals without Iguodala.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer after Curry. I think Curry and Green are very clearly one and two.
Yes.
And there's a level of importance Barnes has to him and how he can guard up better than...
Swiss Army knife players, that's the point. That's the point, is that Golden State is that good because of that. It's not that they're that good because they have the two best players in the league. Or, you know, a three-star system. It's just, we're not there anymore.
I think an important aspect of what you mentioned that makes what Golden State's doing okay on a nightly basis is that the parity across the league really is fun. Like, you can pretty much turn on, like, if I was sitting with a casual fan who didn't look at team names, I could sit them in front of almost any two teams and be like, all right, we're going to watch this game, and there's going to be a reason I could get you interested in some fashion if you weren't judging by, if I could get them to turn off the players' names and the team names, and they just watch, there's good quality across the league. It's not like, I say this, the NBA has good parity right now, the NFL has bad parity.
The NFL's product is suffering. I mean, the NFL product, now, the NFL is the single most popular thing in this country. I don't really think that's arguable. And if we're going to, quote-unquote, fall, it's not something that would ever happen overnight. That's not what I'm talking about, the fall of the NFL. I'm just talking about their product right now is not that good. There is so much mediocrity that leads to poor play. The officiating is impossible to ignore. The rules, the ambiguity of the rules. I mean, they're going to need forensic evidence to confirm a catch pretty soon. I mean, that's like, it's not like a tuck rule thing that happens every now and again. A catch happens all the time. You know, like, we don't know what a catch is. And the idea that you're constantly watching someone in agony, or we know about the ramifications of head trauma and all that stuff. I don't think the NFL's in a great place, including the domestic violence and all the stuff off, just a myriad of different reasons. The NBA, the one criticism that is a fair one, is that the stakes are not that high, right? The regular season doesn't matter that much and isn't necessarily indicative of what's going to happen in the postseason all the time. To that criticism, I say I don't care because I enjoy watching the game. I don't need there to be anything at stake, and it provides me entertainment on a nightly basis. And from a pure, just entertainment fashion perspective, the NBA product is awesome. Just like turning on, and now it's not, there's a couple of them, but there are fewer and fewer of those teams who are just like, I can't watch this team. You know, I mean, there are probably a handful of those teams.
The Nets, the teams I wouldn't want to watch, the Nets, the Sixers, the Lakers I would watch if it wasn't for Kobe, but he makes it hard, and the Bucks don't do much for me. Outside of that, I could find a reason to watch pretty much any other team in the league.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, think about it. Teams like the Charlotte Hornets, for instance. Would you have wanted to watch them in past years? Probably not, right? the Celtics, even when they're doing that, they don't even have a star player at all, but they play fun ball. The Pistons, they're not that good, but they're improved. I mean, I could go on and on with the list. Portland, there's a team that lost the entire core to I don't know if I would go as far as title contender, but a playoff contending team, and they're enjoyable to watch, and that's not even getting to any of the big boys. So I think the NBA is in a really, really good place, talent-wise, structure-wise, and I don't think it hurts that the best teams are extremely, extremely good, and one team maybe better than any we've ever seen.
Anything, let's see, probably just let you go here, but anything else just in general about the NBA that you'd like to hit on or get into before I let you go?
I mean, that's a weird...
Yeah, I know. That's really broad and a really terrible question. Thank you.
Porzingis.
Yes. You're right. That name has to be said on every podcast.
Porzingis. Say it three times and he appears like Beetlejuice.
I can't... how much he's changed everything about that team, I still can't get over.
Yeah, I mean, there's frustrating things about the Knicks, their offense, the roster, and some of that stuff, you know, but... You can almost deal with all of it simply because things like that don't happen very often, you know? I mean, if Porzingis never made a shot, he'd be worth the fourth pick. You know, if he never made a shot. And when he makes the shots, you're like, oh my goodness, this is a top five kind of player potentially.
The head coach drives me nuts. Even though he shows, like, slight improvements that, like, keeps you completely off the edge. But... the team should be better than 8-10, and a decent amount of that probably falls on him.
I think he's getting better. Like the loss to the Rockets, I wouldn't put that on Fisher. I mean, there were some things I guess he could have done better, but I don't. It was more of the earlier games that I was a little bit frustrated. The Vujicic and Calderon games. I mean, he can't play Porzingis the entire game. I mean, that's really what changed it. You don't want his minutes to get up there. And, you know, that's one of those things, too, where you get lost in the moment, where you're so hypercritical in the moment because you want the team to do well or you're emotional about it. And if you take a bigger picture perspective, I think he's doing better. There are still the concerns about ideologically, if philosophically, if they have to run the trial. Like, why are all these guys who aren't that good getting so many high post touches? Or why is the lane clogged as a result? Why aren't they doing, you know, why aren't they playing a little bit more new age basketball? But... all that stuff feels a little bit more trivial because of Porzingis.
Yeah, it's really not. I actually, my one of my criticisms would be I think he's actually leaning on him a little too much and he should probably play a little less.
Yeah, I mean, as a it's hard because if you're looking at his development and you're worried about his health, sure, I get a little concerned if he's playing more than 34 minutes a night. But it's so hard to take him off the floor because you see... I mean, that's the good part about it. You see how different they are when he's in the game versus when he's not in the game.
Oh, jeez, yeah. I get too excited about this. It's been too long. All right, Robin, thank you. You want to plug everything you got one more time?
You know, if they were listening before, they heard it, but I could throw it in there. Just follow me on Twitter, at Robin Lundberg. I put all that stuff out there. But ESPN 98.7 FM in New York, 4 to 6 a.m. Monday through Fridays. There's a podcast of that show. Every day that you can get on the ESPN app, iTunes, all podcastable mediums, and ESPN Radio across the country every Saturday night after whatever sporting event is on, or if there's no sporting events on, starting at 11 p.m.
All right, good stuff, Robin. Thank you very much, and that wraps up the Podium Gate podcast.